You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Nell in Maryland. And Nell is asking about a child who is not speaking in sessions. And not that he is selectively mute. He presents as selectively mute, but has not been provided that diagnosis per her email. So I think I might be making an assumption there, but I'll read little parts of her email so that you get a sense of what's going on. And she has some questions surrounding what to help the parents understand and how best to support him in the playroom. So thanks, Nell, for writing in. I appreciate your question. So the client is 11 years old. And his parents report that he's talkative and sociable at home and with family members that he's comfortable with, but he struggles to connect with peers and adults that he does not know well. He's been tested and is not autistic. And then this is where it gets a little sticky. So his mother's, quote, goals for the sessions, end quote, have been that he verbalizes in hopes that he will feel more comfortable talking outside of therapy. And she suggested that Nell tells him we could talk for 5 minutes and then be quiet for 5 minutes. Oh, Lord have mercy. Okay. So that was my ad lib, not part of the email. Need to be clear since you're not reading it. Okay. So then Nell told his mother that it's important that the therapy room remains a safe place for her son. Good for you, Nell. And that he does not feel pressured to talk there like he does in other settings in his life. And then she goes on to say that he mainly plays with stuffed animals and has them talking to each other for several sessions, including the telephone in the playroom. He seems to be acting out different animals being forced to talk on the phone. And then Nell says, I've been following the CCPT model since we started meeting, and I was hoping that as we continued to work together and he felt safe during our sessions, he would eventually start to talk. We're 12 sessions in and he has still not said a word to me. When I tell him we have 5 minutes left and then 2 minutes left, he looks at me and nods, but that is the most direct interaction that I've had with him. And also noteworthy, I am the third therapist his parents have taken him to, and their pattern is that they end therapy because he is not talking. I would love your suggestions on where to go from here with the client and his parents. Okay, Nell, let's dive in. Thank you for this. This is actually a really helpful question. All right, so let's begin with mom slash parents. Okay. So in this scenario, and I feel like I'm a broken record on these topics, but it's worth repeating because I think this is probably one of the greatest elements of struggle. We have to be really intentional and purposeful as child-centered play therapists about setting expectations with parents. So we have to make it clear that there are stages, there are phases, there's a timeline. We have to help them understand what the process looks like in the playroom. We have to help them understand what the child-centered model looks like. So now I think first and foremost, obviously I suspect at this point you've probably met with them 3 times. If you had an initial parent consult and then a 5-week and then a 10-week, I suspect you've probably met with them 3 times, or at least I hope you have. But it may warrant in the next meeting with them kind of starting from scratch and maybe going back to ground zero a little bit and really helping them understand the big picture of what this model is, what the approach is, why, what the outcomes are going to be, what the timeline looks like. And I think that will get you further down this road with this family than you are now. So I would absolutely say that's probably the most important priority as far as mom and dad are concerned. But here's something else that you need to consider and work into the conversation, in my opinion. It sounds as though, and it obviously, you know, I'm not there meeting with these parents, and it's hard to deduce just from one email, you know, all of the exchanges that you've had and what those conversations have actually looked like. So I'm just going on what I've been given, and I might be misreading this, but if I'm reading it correctly, which I kind of think I am, it sounds as though mom specifically, maybe both parents, are thinking that this whole issue is about him talking. And this is where not only are the parents wrong, but this is where your advocacy comes in. This is where your psychoeducation comes in. This is where your clinical training comes in. And this is where you help paint a very different picture. Because what is actually going on in a child that is not talking? Is this a talking, verbalization, communication issue? Absolutely not. What's the undercurrent root cause of this? I'm sure all of you just said anxiety. Good for you. Okay, so here's what parents need to understand. This is super heightened, unmanageable levels of anxiety. When a child chooses not to talk, whether it's diagnosable as selective mutism or not, it is a willful choice, but it is not a conscious choice. It is, my anxiety is so overwhelming, and my emotions are so big, and I feel so overwhelmed, I clam up and can't say a word. So parents need to understand that this is not a talking issue, and therefore talking is not the focus. And not that you have a focus. Let me make that clear. Child-centered approach, you don't go in with an agenda and you're not focusing on an issue, right? But either way, the issue and what the child needs to address is not the talking. It is the uncontrollable levels of anxiety. So here's what mom and dad need to walk away with. As he reduces his anxiety, and as he is better able to manage his big feelings, he will naturally feel more comfortable speaking. And he will naturally not feel so fearful of talking to people that he doesn't feel comfortable with. So if we only address the talking, that is a band-aid on a gaping wound. What we need to address is the massive levels of anxiety. So if mom and dad can grasp that, then hopefully they will have a better sense of what you're waiting for in the playroom and what you're expecting will unfold. All right, so now that we've talked about parents, let's talk about your little guy. All right, so first and foremost, you mentioned that he plays with the stuffed animals and has them talking to each other. Okay, so I'm going to assume that you mean that literally and that in session, he is actually having a dialogue between stuffed animals. So if he is voicing one animal talking to another, he is in fact talking in sessions. So let's make that very clear. I anticipate mom is wanting him to talk to you, but he is in fact talking in sessions and he's talking in front of you, which means that's already better than it sounds like what he does in other situations where he doesn't connect with peers or adults that he doesn't know. And I've worked with quite a few children that have been diagnosed with selective mutism. And there is a staged process of their overcoming their fear of speaking. So it's, I don't say a word, I don't make any noises, there are no sounds, I am completely mute. It usually starts with giggles or noises first, and then it moves into sounds, and then it moves into whispers, and then it moves into like one word at a time, and then it moves into several words strung together, and then it moves into full sentences. There is a very stair-stepped process that kids go through when they are developing a comfort with speaking. So the fact that he is dialoguing play with animals is huge. That is something to celebrate. So if mom and dad can't see the significance of that, then that's definitely something that needs to be shared. And here's why he's doing this in the capacity that he is. The animals are talking right now, so it's third person. He's not first person talking yet. I mean, he is actively doing the talking, but in a narrative dialogue of two animals talking back and forth, there's a distance where he can feel a little bit safer and a little bit more removed from actually talking. So if the two stuffed animals are talking, it's not him, right? So he's practicing his comfort. He's practicing his ability to talk in front of people, even though he's using the animals to do it as third person because it gives some space. So we will often see third person play, and then it eventually transitions to first person play, as they feel more safe and comfortable and they can have the ownership and the responsibility of whatever that play is. So I think that's a really significant thing that should be celebrated first. Second, and this sort of goes back to parents, but specifically your question, I would love suggestions on where to go with him. Let's just lay this out on the table. we do not change our approach to accommodate parents' requests or demands. I'm going to say that again. We don't change our approach to accommodate parents' requests or demands. Ever. For any reason. I don't care how hard they push. I don't care how much they beg. I don't care if you're scared they're going to pull their kid out. I don't care if they're threatening you. I don't care if they're not bought in and you can tell that they're hanging on by a thread. And if you'll just do this one thing, it might pacify them. Under no circumstance do we change what we do to accommodate requests and demands from parents. Why? Because they don't know what is best. And we do. It's just that simple. It's not to be defiant. It's not to refuse. It's not a power trip. It's none of those things. It's, I know what your child needs, and you've trusted me enough to trust me with your child. You need to trust the process, and you need to trust my clinical judgment. And my clinical judgment says this child needs child-centered play therapy. And if you just let it unfold, your child will do the work that your child needs to do. And that has to be communicated in that simple of terms. I know that you'd really like me to ask him to talk for 5 minutes and to not talk for 5 minutes, but here's why I won't do that. Here's why that's not child-centered. Here's why the child-centered method is more appropriate. All of those things have to be worked into conversations with parents. And it's respectfully, and it's gently, and it's lovingly, and it's all of those things, but it is very firm and it's direct. So we will never, ever change what we're doing because a parent is forcing us to do it or insisting upon it or any of those other things. All right. And then finally, you mentioned he's 12 sessions in. That is only 25 to 30% of the way through the national average. 30 to 40 sessions is the average, with the meta-analysis study saying that 38 sessions was the magic number. So across 60 some odd studies, if children reached 38 sessions, their presenting issues were resolved. Well, 12 in, you're 30 or so percent of the way. So part of this is also setting expectations of timeline and the pace with which a child is going to make changes. I actually feel like 12 sessions in, a child having stuffed animals talk back and forth and talk on the phone when a child is struggling to speak, if that doesn't show and demonstrate the work that that child is doing, I don't know what could. So I would hope that mom and dad would see how much he's working and that he knows what he needs to address, and he's doing that. But I think mom and dad might also need some perspective on, we're 12 in and we need to hit 30 to 40. So I think that will also help, because if you're the third therapist and the pattern is they end therapy because he's not talking, you may also want to, and gosh, I feel like all I'm doing is railing on these parents, and I don't mean for it to come across that way. Parents are our partners, right? So we have to honor and value and respect and understand and validate and all those things. So I don't want this to come across as just I'm negative against the whole thing. But here's what I might also throw into your next meeting. You know, I'm wondering, since I'm the third therapist, if maybe he's not talking to me and he's not moving forward at the pace with which you would like him to, because he's never really had an experience where he can complete his work. So I just wonder if maybe he doesn't think that this is going to last either. And so he's hesitant to really dive in, because if he's not going to be able to continue with me, there's really no point in him putting in the work. I think that's a worthwhile conversation too, because a child can't trust you and can't build the relationship and can't feel safe doing the work, especially an anxious child. I mean, anxiety already makes you uncomfortable when you're in a relationship building process, and talking already makes him uncomfortable in a relationship building process. So if he also can't trust that you're going to stick around and that he's going to be able to continue to see you, that could be a huge hindrance that's going on internally for him. So that might be another conversational work in. All right. So I hope that y'all find that helpful. I hope that for those of you that might have pressuring parents and or children that are not talking, I think it's important to keep those things in mind. Oh, and by the way, I don't know if I've shared this story. I know I've talked about it before, but I don't know if it's been on a podcast episode or not. I had a child that did not speak to me one word for an entire course of treatment early in my career. He would talk to me before the session started. As we were walking back to the playroom, he would chit chat about school and church and his day and what he did that weekend. But as soon as we walked into the playroom and shut the door, he was completely silent for the entire 50 minutes. And I went to a play therapy conference, walked up to a child-centered play therapist presenter, and I expressed my confusion and frustration that this child was not speaking to me in session. And I said, and I don't know. I mean, I reflect and I track and I use the reflective responses, but I mean, he doesn't give me anything to work with. I have no idea what's going on. And she just kind of cocked her head with this sweet little smile and said, "Yes, you do." And that's all she said. I just remember being like, "Wait, what?" And it hit me like a gut punch, right? Like, oh my gosh, I've been expecting this kid to talk to me. And all along, he's been communicating everything he needed to without saying a word. And I just had these expectations. And therefore, because they weren't being met, I was just distracted by my need for him to talk. And I have never forgotten that. And I have never done that again. A child does not need to talk to you for child-centered play therapy to work. So don't get caught up in the pressure, Nell, of a parent expecting that. And for all of us, we can't have the desire for a child to verbally communicate with us in the playroom. That's not part of the deal. The child-centered way is you choose what you want to do. And if you choose to be silent, the work still gets done and we still unconditionally accept you and we still trust the process. Because they've proven that CCPT works with children that have apraxia and aphasia and speech delays and speech difficulties and the inability to speak. They've proven it's effective with traumatic brain injury where people have lost their ability to communicate verbally. So we don't need to expect a child to speak. And that is a very powerful burden lifter for us, right? All right, y'all. I appreciate you. Super grateful for every one of you. If you want to have a weekly Q&A with me, I'd love to have you on the collective. Go to ccptcollective.com and you can sign up for that. It's been so fun. We almost have 100 people on there now. Oh my gosh. And if you want to ask me a question, call or email me, brenna@thekidcounselor.com. Call 813-812-5525. Love y'all. I'm grateful for you. Hope that you're enjoying the, well, in Florida, it doesn't really feel like spring. It's almost kind of starting to feel like summer. But for the rest of you, I'm hoping that you're enjoying your spring. And for my international people, I have no idea what season you're in. So happy April. All right. Love y'all. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.